Across the galaxy, the Clone Wars spread.
Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network's Look Back at the Clone Wars micro-series.
Against this threat, upon the Jedi Knights falls the duty to lead the newly formed Army of the Republic.
While the full-length Clone Wars show is on summer hiatus, come back to RepublicForces.com this summer and join Dan, Jen, Jerry, Barrett, and Nathan as they look back at all 25 episodes of the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars series that aired from 2005 through 2008.
You have been selected for this task because you are the best, the elite. You all know what to do.
In these matters, trust your insight, we do. May the Force be with you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network and our fabulous summer programming. Continuing to bring you all things Clone Wars, this summer we are going to be delving into the Tartakovsky micro-series that aired on Cartoon Network all those years ago, right before Episode 3 was released in theaters. And joining me all summer long to talk about these episodes will be Jen.
Hi there.
Nathan P. Butler.
Hello.
Jerry.
Man, I can't believe I got held back for summer school again.
Well, at least it's not Ewoks. Come on. And Barrett.
Hey, everybody. It's Barrett, Master Collect Them All on the Forums, your Swan Holocron Enhancer. And I'm very excited to be doing this with you guys again. Actually, because I wasn't invited last summer.
Barrett, did you actually watch any of the Droids episodes?
I did you a favor, sir. I watched all of the Droids episodes, and I love them.
Willingly?
Yes. I kept hoping that somebody was going to be sick, and I would have to, you know, jump on the round table. Because, you know, you're kind of baiting me out there, Jerry, with that. You know, Barrett, we'll use you if someone gets sick. And everybody's actually really healthy on the round table, which is a good thing.
Well, it's summertime.
I was wondering why you kept sending me all those packages that kind of smelled diseased.
We are, again, going to be talking about the Tartakovsky micro-series. This episode, we're just going to cover the very first episode, Chapter 1. I believe that is correct in both DVD and TV airing land order. So Episode 1 is still the first episode. But before we get into that, we're going to go around and talk about some of our thoughts and our hopes and our dreams and our fond memories of this series when it was aired all those years ago. Then we'll get into it and find out if time has tinted our memories or if it was all we remember it to be. So to kind of get us started, Jen, what do you remember of this series? When it came out, did you get to watch it all on Cartoon Network? Were you an iTunes downloader?
I was a bad person. I was in grad school when this came out. I wasn't. I was in college. And so I was not watching any TV at all. I was kind of a nerd. So I did not watch any of this until after it came out on DVD. And I think I watched maybe like the last two right before Revenge of the Sith came out. And that was it. So I did not see this except as one big lump after the DVDs came out. So I did not get to see it in its original format. So I'm kind of a bad Star Wars fan.
I don't think that necessarily makes you a bad Star Wars fan. The way these were aired, it was kind of strange. They were the last 3 minutes of other shows and you had to be there to see when the next one was. It was all like a big secret meeting. So
I really enjoyed this series. I don't remember very much of it, which makes me sad, but I'm glad we're rewatching it. But I remember some of the stuff, especially from the first quote unquote season. And I remember really loving it and actually got me into the Clone ARC Troopers episode got me into clones, period, and it kind of sparked my clone madness. And I love it. So this got me really excited for Revenge of the Sith. And I remember really liking it, but I have very little memory of what happens in it. So I'm looking forward to rewatching it and getting to know what happened again.
All right. Now, our newest member of summer school, Barrett. When did you first see it, and what were your overall opinions of the micro-series?
Well, I am going to have to mimic kind of Now Playing, what they do on the Now Playing podcast. I am the newbie when it comes to this series. I have never seen this series. This series, I believe, played on the Cartoon Network in 2005, right before Revenge of the Sith was released, correct?
Well, it had a 2003 run. That was season 1, the first 10 episodes. 2004 was the next 10 episodes. And then right before episode 3 were the last 5, which became the volume 2 DVD.
In between, in that time span that these micro series was released, was the time span that I had met my wife, I'd gotten married, my child was being born, and basically we had actually moved to North Carolina, and I had galactic purged my whole collection in order to move. You know, I sold everything I had. And so actually Star Wars was kind of put to the back burner at this time. So I have never, ever seen any of these. I had seen, you know, I think I had saw like a Snow Buddy Padme one, like some of it. And like one time, like bits and pieces, maybe I saw like a second or two if I just happened to be switching through. And I think they did like a, they replayed them. They replayed them all on Cartoon Network. And, you know, and I think I saw a couple, but as far as being very familiar with the series, I mean, I don't even remember what I saw. So I'm very excited actually to watch these for the first time and actually see exactly where the whole Clone Wars vibe comes from. You know, the clones, on how the clones really act and their attitude and how they actually do battle, because we kind of got some of that in episode 2, but you know, the clones weren't as personal as, you know, I liked them to be. So this is my whole introduction into the Clone Wars, basically. So I'm very excited.
Jerry, tell us what when you saw it and what your impressions and memories of the series are.
Sure. Yeah, I remember this fondly, you know, watching it when it was first on. So, yeah, I mean, originally the season 1 came on like November of 2003. And it was kind of funny because I think it came on at 8 o'clock and then, you know, was done by 8:05 for whatever show came on, or maybe it started at 7:55 or whatever. So it was kind of weird. So it was on, season 1 was like November 2003, season 2 was like March of 2004. And then we got season 3, like March of 2005 or something before episode 3 came out. And in the first season, the 2003 season, I actually watched it each night. And to me, it was tough to watch it that way. I didn't really, to be honest with you, really enjoy that whole concept of, okay, I just sat here and watched a 2 minute, actually some of it ended up being, you know, 4 minutes, because I spent 50 seconds, you know, recapping the one the night before, which was a little annoying. But then what if I recall correctly, what happened was they would play them like, they started like the Friday on a Friday with episode 1. Then you came back the Monday for 2. And then it went Monday through Friday, and then the next week, Monday through Thursday, because they started on Friday. So they ended on a Thursday, but then on the Friday, they played them all together. And I thought, wow, that was enjoyable. So the next go around, I skipped them. I just waited for the one night where they played them all together. And then for season 3, the 2005, since each episode was a little bit longer, I actually sat down and watched those, because I believe those just happened in a five Monday through Friday type time span. But either way, my overall impressions of the series was kind of like, it's the best of times is the worst of times, because there's some episodes that just blow you away. You kind of wish all Star Wars was like this. But then as we'll talk, there are some things in this Clone Wars series that is just absolutely ridiculous. So, but we'll get into those things specifically. So it was very up and down, and I'll be very interested in hearing kind of, you know, hopefully Nathan can bring this perspective of how does this connect with Labyrinth of Evil? How does it really connect into the opening of the film? Is anything really canonical right now compared to what the Clone Wars series is doing? It'll be fun to see.
All right, Nathan?
Now, this was an interesting time for Star Wars in a lot of ways. I had just moved down to Fairburn, Georgia from Indiana, and I was in my second year of teaching, the very beginning of the second year of teaching, when the first 10 of these episodes aired. And it was kind of odd, because this was before the Clone Wars had really deluged all of Star Wars, you know? The last thing that had come out, if I remember correctly, was the Unifying Force. So the New Jedi Order had just ended. We were about to get one of the worst Star Wars novels ever, Ruins of Dantooine, the tie-in to Star Wars Galaxies. I mean, it wasn't a time when the Clone Wars were the focus for the EU just yet. It wasn't all being blown way, way out of proportion. I mean, it was still going. I mean, it was developing, but it hadn't reached the saturation point, I guess. People were still really, really intrigued by it, and intrigued by these new characters like Asajj Ventress, Dirge, and others who wound up playing a bigger role within the comic book series. So I remember this being very intriguing. I did catch all of them on Cartoon Network when they first aired. In fact, what I would do is basically just take a VHS tape, hit record, and let it record that little chunk, go back and watch it if by chance I wasn't sitting there watching it as it was live, then put them all into a VHS tape in order so I could go back and view them all later to be able to put them on the Timeline Gold. Also, if I remember correctly, I was a Hyperspace member at the time, and I'm pretty sure they did something special on the StarWars.com website where you either got early access to it or a bigger QuickTime file version of it or something, whereby being part of Hyperspace, you get a little bit more access to the series in case you missed it on television. It's a decent little series. I'm glad they didn't go with this style when they did the current ongoing series. But for a small little set of stories, some quick little get in, get out, toss out a little bit of story type thing, it worked pretty well. Genndy Tartakovsky certainly has a very unique style within the scope of Star Wars artists, because of course his style is something that he had honed on other things like Samurai Jack beforehand. So it was fun. It was also fun to sort of mock back and forth with this particular series, because it does have its shortcomings that are kind of glaring at times. One of the things I wanted to mention that I had talked to you guys, or a couple of you guys, prior to the show was that way back when these first came out on DVD, I made a DVD commentary for both volumes of it, or for all three seasons, however you want to look at it. They're over there right now at solosound.net under Cantina Commentaries, or they're over on StarWarsFanWorks.com. If you look under Ended Radio Shows and go to Chrono Radio, they're up there too. But I was going back and listening to these, I guess, just a few days ago now, and it's really kind of odd to hear sort of my perspective on it and sort of the jokes that I was cracking at the time, because it's funny. I for whatever reason, there's sort of this looking back on it, thinking that that series felt so much more solid than the early Clone Wars current CG series. And really, it was just as mockable back then as the new series is. So I guess if there's an element of Star Wars that's captured within just being able to laugh at yourself as fans while you're watching something, I think this definitely hit that mark.
Yeah, Nathan, actually, just to interrupt here a second, but you're right. I was a Hyperspace member as well, and I don't think it gave you early access, but I think you could watch it anytime after it originally aired. But if I recall, didn't Genndy Tartakovsky have commentary during the show that was on Hyperspace?
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was.
I think that was the special
commentary. Yeah, that was what it was. You had two QuickTime files, one of which was commentary. That's what it was.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, by the way, Dan, before you give your introductory thoughts here, I just feel weird because everyone's talking like they're in like this different point in their life when this show aired. And I guess I only had one kid at the time. My daughter wasn't born until 04, but I'm just like, yeah, I lived in Cincinnati doing the same job I do now. But it's weird to think that this show is now almost 8 years old from its first season. Yikes.
What I think is really kind of shocking about it, looking back on it from the perspective that we're looking at it from, is we're watching these all very quickly straight through, and we're going to discuss them for episodes that air all within the summer here. And most Star Wars fans who have gotten into it in recent years have seen these as Volume 1 and Volume 2 on DVD running straight through, kind of like Jerry was talking about that Friday viewing where you could see them all together. But when you really get down to it, these were months apart. Anyone who watched these originally on television got basically 10 episodes and a, whoa, what's going to happen next with Anakin and Asajj, and then nothing for months. And then got, whoa, that's General Grievous. He's badass. Not anymore. But, whoa, look, it's General Grievous. And then we had to wait for season 3. And I think with how short these are and how quickly you can blow through them on DVD, we lose a little bit of sight these days of the fact that these really were sort of cliffhanger-y type stories. I mean, we really had to wait and wait and wait. And there were times when we weren't even entirely sure if they were going to make any more episodes of this. Turns out Lucas used this as a testing ground. He refers to this as the pilot series when talking about the new Clone Wars series. But from a production standpoint, very much like a pilot, it was out there. We had to wait. You don't have to wait now.
Yeah, Jerry, to go to your point, I'm also going to be one of these. It's a different time, another life. Not entirely. I mean, I was married to my wife, and my daughter had just been born, so I had two kids. I hadn't yet gotten custody of my oldest, but I was still working in the restaurant biz, playing in the band, so my Friday, Saturday evenings were occupied. So I was one that had to watch these later. I seem to remember recording these, or maybe I caught the finale when they put all 10 episodes together and I saw them that way. But I do remember having them on a VHS tape to watch them repeatedly. And for those of you kids who aren't really sure what a VHS tape is, in the forums, I will link to the wiki on VHS and you can be educated. It'll be fun for you.
Yeah, I have to admit, I did that too. I had a, when I wasn't sure what they're going to do with them, I did record, just like you said, Nathan, I record them just the same. I don't have it anymore, obviously, but I mean, because of the DVDs, but yeah, I did the VHS thing too.
Nah, this was a time to record it on VHS, and if you wanted better quality, you scrambled to try to figure out how to save the QuickTime file off of StarWars.com. There were lots of forum discussions on, how do I do this? Do I need QuickTime Pro? How do I do it? You know, that sort of thing. It became one of those quick early runs on people trying to save video content through hyperspace off of StarWars.com. Not exactly something that I'm sure the Lucasfilm folks were happy about, but at the same time, even though it was at times being discussed on their forums, they didn't turn around and squash the discussion constantly either. I think they kind of just sat back and thought, well, you know, if people are enjoying it, these same people who are trying to get this are probably going to want to get the DVDs later anyway, so who cares?
Yeah, but this series introduced us to some of our, or some of my personally favorite characters and just ideas. Like, I loved the introduction of the ARCs, and we'll talk about this later. I'm not really sure if this is where we first see ARC troopers, but this is where I first saw them, and I loved them. I thought they were awesome. And I really liked Asajj, even though, yes, she was very close to the villain we saw in Bounty Hunter, but still, I really liked her and her relationship with Dooku. And some of the images that we first saw in this series, like the Obi-Wan, the clone armor, those are some things that really stuck with me. So I really like this series. Looking back on it, yes, I do, in my mind, before we started watching this again, I thought, wow, this is so much better than the Clone Wars now, at least like the first series, because we didn't have these mumbo-jumbo political episodes that bored you to tears. But then, you know, we had that whole series that whole episode with Anakin in the snow trying to save the planet, and that's kind of weirdness. So, yeah, it was just as out there as some of the episodes of our current Clone Wars are. But we will get to those.
Yeah, and I guess the kind of interesting about this series that, you know, I mentioned earlier, my daughter actually was born in 04, but my son, he was 2.5 when this show first came on, and then by the time the ones in 05, he was about 4 years old. So I actually, you know, he always used to really enjoy watching these, and I think the nature of the 3-4 minute storyline, I guess, with an attention span or whatever. I actually watched at least the first DVD a lot, because if we took a little car trip or something, we could just pop this thing in there. And I enjoyed listening to him because, you know, I'm driving, I got my head turned away from the video, and he would just watch these things all the time. And I think, as you know, at least you'll kind of get out of my comments, I think this show was done a lot differently because of this 3-4 minute format. It was so action and very little dialogue in Lost Spaces. Or a lot of places, and it was really, really interesting to a 4-year-old to watch.
So, jumping right in, Chapter 1, which is kind of our teaser, lays the groundwork for what will be the main story arc of Season 1 and 2, or the first Volume 1, if you're watching this. Well, I guess everybody's watching it on DVD if they're watching it now, aren't they? So we are introduced to kind of a splash of images of various Jedi in battle scenes, kind of not too distant from the way we see a lot of the newsreels in the current series. So after our kind of newsreel of this series, then we go right to Coruscant.
I think in general, Episode 1 did a good job, although it was a little frustrating because, again, this appeared on the Friday to kind of introduce you to the show, and then you had to wait till Monday to actually see where the story's going. But it did a really good job at just kind of setting the stage, like, hey, this is what this story is going to be about. And then you kind of have that little, you know, you just see so many little clips of battles here and Jedi doing that and this Jedi and that battle and that scene and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And you're like, wow, this is going to have a lot of cool stuff in it. And, you know, pretty much everything we saw in there was a little snippet of things that were going to happen later, with the possible exception of Sassy Tien flying the starship. I don't think we ever really saw him in action like that, although he had different type of action, I guess, in the second season. But I think overall they did a really good job of just really using that first episode to say, hey, guys, this is what this series is going to be about, and we'll get back to some real action on Monday.
I think a lot of people saw that initial shot of Yoda riding the creature with his cloak on and the lightsaber stabbing out, and they're like, oh, hell, this is either going to be really cool or really, really bad. I think the last thing anybody expected was Yoda charging in like freaking Braveheart, you know?
Yeah, but just like our newsreels now, we got some images that were never again used. They weren't part of episodes that would follow. Like that scene of Yoda on the Kaibuck, we didn't actually see him on the Kaibuck until the assault on Coruscant in Volume 2/Season 3. And that shot that we get of the Hawkbat troops in the rain, that's the only time we see them as well. So there are some images there that we just used to get our attention. Oh, yeah. And they didn't really go anywhere with those either.
That's the whole point, though. It's like fire through the galaxy, the Clone Wars spreads or whatever. It's setting the stage. We're used to the idea now that a lot of times what we see in the opening newsreel is setting up something for that particular episode. But remember, even some of the earlier episodes of the current series, we would see these glimpses of things that had nothing to do with an actual episode. They're just flavor, in a sense. You know, I don't see that as necessarily a flaw in the way that they put this together. They were just trying to give us, in a matter of seconds, a feeling that this is a galactic war, not one or two planets.
But that shot, Dan, was enough to justify an action figure in a repaint wave in the Attack collection. And I think that exact shot is on the back of the card, too.
It was also enough to justify me having to buy 6 of them.
Wow.
You know, this what it did was it set the stage for me to be impressed, because I had never seen any kind of animation like this. It was a kind of a cross between, it kind of reminded me of Samurai Jack animation, where, you know, they kind of have the quick, sharp movements, but they didn't have the complete anime style with the, you know, red and blue stripes behind you every time you make an action move. And I'm coming from someone who's actually been involved, you know, used to the Clone Wars as we, you know, that's on television now. So seeing all of the familiar styles and the familiar characters that I already know through the current Clone Wars series, and actually seeing how they were introduced, it just kind of blew my mind. I mean, the super battle droids to Anakin to the starships, to the clone troopers, everything looked familiar to what I know, just in a cooler, more stylized version of it. So I was kind of blown away by the first, you know, with Yoda and the whole newsreel. And I was really excited. And I can only imagine what it would have been like to watch this on Friday, you know, watch 1 minute and 40 seconds of it, and then have to wait 3-4 days to watch another 1 minute and 40 seconds. And you know, it must have been absolutely maddening, because it's amazing.
Was that Samurai Jack reference just a matter of comparison, or were you purposely using Samurai Jack? Because you know the roots that tie into Samurai Jack with this, right?
I have no idea. No,
Yendi Tartakovsky is the Samurai Jack guy.
Oh, really?
Because I was going to say
that's what it reminded me of. It looks exactly like that animation. So no, I had no idea.
I was thinking the same thing, Nathan. I was like, oh, wow, he must be doing that intentionally and saying, hey, I just can easily tell. No, that was almost by design.
Oh, that's great.
At least you didn't say, like, you know, Avatar Last Airbender. So, you know, just pick out another cartoon.
Barrett, you bring up the style, and that's something that actually really struck me. I remember actually really disliking the style of this show, because I was never really into Samurai Jack. And I remember at the beginning of the CG Clone Wars series, I remember a lot of people getting kind of upset over the way they had stylized the characters. I know Count Dooku got a lot of problems because he looks like his face has been chiseled out of a piece of rock. And people, for some reason, some people didn't seem to have as much of a problem with this series, but like, it has a pretty significant stylized cast to the characters. And like Palpatine in this, I actually stopped for a minute because he was creepy looking in this first episode. And I'm actually kind of surprised. It just made me kind of look back and remember that people didn't really give a lot of like flack over this series for the stylized characters, but they did for Clone Wars, and they're much more in this series. Just thought that was interesting.
Well, there was some, if I remember correctly, people were criticizing the Anakin butt crack chin kind of cleft going on. And I think one of the things that emerged out of this was, of course, you know, after the Phantom Menace, there was all that, wait a second, are we supposed to know that Sidious and Palpatine are the same person? It's like, yeah, they try to make it blatantly obvious, but they don't flat out say it. So there was some sense of, was George meaning for us to know it? And of course, then we move on to Episode 2, and it's like, yeah, we know. But then you get into this series, and Darth Burns, so to speak, the way that they do Palpatine in this first episode and elsewhere with his like clickety clickety fingers and everything, and then you compare that to the way they pull off Sidious later. And unless this guy is swapping in and out dentures, they don't appear to be the same character at all. The facial design between the two are very, very different, including the teeth, especially when you see Sidious. So they did some things that sort of took away from some of the aspects that I think we were supposed to accept as true or truisms within Star Wars. Yes, Palpatine, Sidious, same person. It caused people to sort of be taken aback a little bit. And I remember there being a lot of flack about Dirge being quite so gooey, kind of basically being like a Stretch Armstrong made out of the gristle in sausage, basically, versus the way he was portrayed elsewhere, and the very stylized Betty Boop on crack-esque version of Asajj Ventress we see here. So, I mean, there were some concerns, but I think what happened was that they bubbled up and they sort of disappeared very quickly, and people leaped into this series and didn't heavily criticize it as much as you do the new ones. I think more so because in this case, there wasn't a lot of stuff for them to contradict to begin with, and you didn't have the introduction of all new characters that seemed to throw a wrench into things like an Ahsoka.
Okay, Nathan, you're going to have to explain Darth Burns.
Darth Burns, but Palpatine looks like Mr. Burns. Palpatine was joked about for ages Simpsons as being Burns. Mr. Burns, yeah.
Okay. Now, when you said Betty Boop on crack, did you actually mean Betty Boop or like the little orphan? I always got Little Orphan Annie out of it because she has no eyeballs.
Yeah, well, either one, just that stylized black and white, overly exaggerated, old school artistic style. So Betty Boop, Little Orphan Annie, whatever. Although Little Orphan Annie, I guess we learned from Robot Chicken, is the Skywalker here.
Oh, well, yeah. I always love that one scene from an episode, I guess we'll talk about next time, where Asajj wakes up and she opens her eyes and they're still empty. I'm just like, okay, what good did that do her?
It's not to say that this art style is not one that can evoke emotion. One of my favorite music cues and visuals in Star Wars, probably one of the top 10 for me, is the end of this first chapter when Anakin is in the Azure Angel, his modified starfighter, the blue one, and he's lifting off to leave to join the troops, and the ship comes up next to Palpatine's. Yeah, that would have been a weird scene. Next to Padme's apartment. There you go. And she's kind of looking out at him, and he's like got the hand up to the glass and everything. And without actually having any dialogue, it says a lot about the relationship between the two. And with this coming less than a year after the release of Attack of the Clones in theaters, that really struck me. And the music swelling and then eventually doing the iris out just nailed me. That gripped me to get me into the rest of this series, and it still remains one of my favorites to this day, right alongside Anakin's jumping down onto the Octoptura droid in the Clone Wars film, where he says, you know, follow me, and leaps down. Anakin's got some of the best music cues, in my opinion, in the series, and this still stands out. People ask me, you know, about Star Wars music. This is the example that usually comes up for something that's not within the films.
Well, I'm glad he has the best music cues, because he has the worst voice ever. I cannot stand hearing him talk.
Oh, Matt Lucas. He played Anakin in everything up until the Clone Wars cartoon series came around, the new Clone Wars cartoon series. They did that a lot of times. They took Nick Jameson, who was always Palpatine or Sidious, and had him be Palpatine Sidious in here, and then switched it to Ian Abercrombie for later. T.C. Carson plays Mace Windu in both still. And you've got James Arnold Taylor, of course, still playing Obi-Wan across them. Gray Delisle, gone from the series, replaced by Nika Futterman, I think it was, for Asajj Ventress. Yeah, what they did with this series was they kind of brought together all the voice actors that had previously been doing Clone Wars stuff, like for the Clone Wars video game, or for some of the other prequel-era games set between episodes 1 and 2, and sort of brought them together. And this wound up being kind of their final hurrah in a lot of ways. And then their appearances started to really taper off, and when they launched this new series, I know a lot of us were expecting the same voice actors to return, but only a few of them did. I mean, we still got Corey Burton being Dooku, we still have James Arnold Taylor playing Obi-Wan, you still have T.C. Carson playing Mace Windu. Yeah, and you had Tom Kane also playing Yoda, but just about everybody else pretty much has changed. Nick Jameson was the one doing Palpy slash Sidious. He's been replaced by Ian Abercrombie. Matt Lucas has been replaced by Matt Lanter. They added a T to the name and changed the last name, but it's the same initial. Conspiracy theories abound. And then we had Gray Delisle, who I believe in this series, if I remember correctly, was playing Asajj Ventress and Padme, or she had played Padme before elsewhere. And of course, Padme is now Cat Tabor, Asajj Ventress is now Nika Futterman. I mean, they sort of shuffle things around, and it's a good thing in most cases because it's very hard to take some of these more cartoony performances seriously. Although I will say, to Matt Lucas's credit, he was much better as Anakin in the Clone Wars game that came out around this time than he is in this micro series. It's almost like in this series they made him wussy himself up to be more like the petulant, whiny Anakin of Episode 2 rather than the butt-kicking Anakin of Episode 2. It's like he went the opposite direction with the portrayal than he does almost every other time he does that voice.
I know you don't think I'm worthy of my own command, and you don't have confidence in me.
Matt Lucas's performance in this series reminds me of when they try to get an actor, and not a voice actor, but just a regular actor, to do a voice where they don't excel. You know, they just released that movie Paul with Seth Rogen, where on Seth Rogen on screen, you know, he's pretty lively. You know, he's the guy you all want to get along and support. But when you saw that movie at Paul, it just didn't fit. And it just kind of gave me that same, you know, that same feeling of he's not really a voice actor. And James Arnold Taylor is a voice actor. You can tell when Obi-Wan talks, you know, just the little nuances at the ends of words or the way that sentences are that he says sentences. And it just his performance here was just kind of flat. And it just reminded me of, you know, just like the kid. It just reminded me of the kid who's just boring, you know, and it was not fun to listen to all the time. I'll tell you that.
Maybe he was just trying to emote how a person would sound if their chin looked like a giant butt stapled to their face.
But I love what you said, Jerry. Hey, Master, you know, hey, I really do trust you, Obi-Wan. And it's just like, what are you, you know?
The Chancellor can see it. Why can't you?
Yes.
It's not your skills.
Like, oh, my God.
It's your acting ability.
Now we know where Luke gets it. We're going to pick up power converters.
No, Matt Lucas is George Lucas's son. Is there any relation? No. Matt Lucas?
Now, there were a lot of people, though, early on who saw the name Matt Lucas and thought there must be some kind of nepotism going on. I think it was just a coincidence. I've never run into any notation that they're actually related in any way.
I would have bet on it. Because I was like, that's how he got the job. There's no way this guy could have, you know, I don't want to keep harping on the guy.
He delivers dialogue like Lucas writes dialogue. And I did just check on Wikipedia, and it flat out says that he is not related to George Lucas and hopes to do more voiceover acting in the future. Good luck.
In a silent movie, maybe. But
Well, which, you know, is a good segue, I think, because this Clone Wars series, almost at least this first volume or the first season that I've watched very recently to prepare for, you know, our initial recordings here, very much almost was a silent movie. I mean, I didn't remember how little dialogue there was in relation to all the great action, which is the one thing that I kind of wish that the current Clone Wars series could take some notes on.
Jerry, that was one point I was going to make. We hear a lot of talk about how the Star Wars movies, particularly the original trilogy, could be a silent film, and people have converted them to that to make that point. But these micro episodes, this series, almost is, especially the first and second season, a silent movie. There's so little dialogue. In fact, one of the ARC Troopers episodes, I believe there's just one line that Fordo says, and that's the only dialogue in the entire episode. So these episodes, or this series, really showed that that actually works pretty well in Star Wars.
I think the best phrase I ever heard to refer to these episodes was kinetic. It's very kinetic. There's motion everywhere. There's action. There's motion everywhere, unless you're the back row of battle droids sitting there while all the front row fights. Okay, but in general, it's a very frenetic pace to this entire series straight through. Even when you're talking about something that is as simple as a battle droid going up the steps, and they're running up the steps. The steps that they're taking, because you only have a limited amount of time, are like, clack, 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 clack. You know, it's zipping right along. I think the limiting on pacing for this, or the limited amount of time they had to tell this story, really served to make this very kinetic and much more of, as you were saying, a silent film approach than otherwise, because they had to tell everything with quick shots, quick cuts from one scene to the next. And then, of course, we have one episode taking place entirely underwater, so, or almost entirely underwater. So for the most part, you can't have dialogue with that one unless they're going to gurgle. You know, it really.
But they are going to blow a horn underwater.
They're going to blow a horn. They're going to use laser weapons. They're going to throw a freaking force bowling ball. But we're not to that episode yet. But no, it really does. I have to wonder how the pacing of the current series would be with the current creative team if they were given more constraints on time. If some of these multi-part episodes, they weren't able to stretch and stretch and stretch, and maybe we're limited to two instead of three, or one instead of two, one instead of three. I gotta wonder if we will ever get a chance, and I highly doubt we ever will. I gotta wonder if at some point we might be able to see some kind of breakdown of how the Clone Wars film, with its somewhat odd pacing, would have been if it were split up into the original four episodes it was meant to be. Were there scenes that were added, aside from transitions, to make that all fit together? And how would the original ones have felt pacing-wise? Would it have felt better than the Clone Wars film that, in a lot of ways, messed up on the pacing? You know, there's something to be said for working within constraints, and it doesn't seem like, aside from character models and such, that the current Clone Wars team is working under quite as much constraint as this team did, or many series and television are.
Well, and two notes that I think the current team could take is how excited I think, at least speaking for myself, how excited I was for the episodes that focused, you know, on the Clone Wars, which is in the title. And you know what? You can write a series that's pretty entertaining. At least some of the episodes, I think, were really fantastic, where the battle droids don't have to talk to each other like they're morons. I mean, we got a Roger Roger, but, you know, you didn't see like that grappling hook kind of show up at the foot of the battle droid and he go, "Hey, what's this? Is this something we should be concerned about? We should contact..." I mean, you know, we didn't need that here. And my hat's off to him for not making the battle droids the punchline to all the stupid jokes.
Something else in this series that I think is actually really neat, and I don't think they can physically pull it off as well in the CG series, is kind of the scale of things. They can, because it's traditional animation, they can kind of clone stuff and make it look like there are a lot more of a certain object, like the dropships, for example, on the screen. And it gives you this really much more, much greater sense of scale. Like, this is a huge battle or a huge war. There are just tons of people on the battlefield. Whereas with the CG series, they'd have to sit there and watch something render for 27 hours where if they wanted that level of characters on the screen. So it's kind of neat to see, because you get a much greater feeling of this is a planetary war in some of those shots.
Jen, that's a great point. That was one of my notes, was all these battles feel huge. I mean, I know we're not to this episode yet, but like when they first like start attacking the Munalist, there's got to be like 3,000 gunships that come down. I'm like, are you kidding?
It reminded me of the launch of the dredge fighters from Titan AE, just coming out of the mothership and just going all over the place, just filling the screen. That's the same thing when you're on the ground, that there's enough firepower that you believe it when one of the buildings comes tumbling down that they're blasting into, because there's just so much going on. But I will say there is a flip side to this, because while in this case, with it being traditional animation, you had more things happening on the screen, more characters filling the screen, usually teeny tiny characters filling the screen, as opposed to having to render everything out in the CG series. At least when things happen in the CG series, they're not characters that are sitting there. Usually the characters are moving. One of the things that bothers me most about this series, as I think I referenced earlier, is you'll have instances where there's tons of battle droids, but the only ones that are moving are the ones in the front row. Everybody else is standing still. Or at the very beginning of this one, all the battle droids are marching as the bombs that are dropped fall into them, kind of like bowling balls and such. They're all marching, but it's all very uniform. Yes, they can clone it, but it doesn't quite look quite as natural. And then you've got instances like, and then you get the part that used to be part four when it aired on television, now it's part five on the DVD, where Dirge is charging toward, I think it's that part, he's charging towards these tanks. And amongst the tanks, when we see one shot, is a whole bunch of troopers. There's tank troopers, tanks troopers, tanks troopers, all spread out. And then when they finally get there and start blowing up the tanks, the troopers have miraculously disappeared. I think you run into that more with traditional animation than you do with the CG animation, because the elements being tracked aren't being tracked in the same way. So it gives you a sense of scale. But I think for my money, I still prefer getting the feel of scale the way that the CG series did, because it feels like everything is still moving, which is funny given how kinetic this series actually feels, that this is the one where we have so many static background characters and such just kind of doing nothing.
All right. And we're starting to drift into later episodes. We're going to wind this episode's discussion down.
You know, this is the series in general because they all have the same opening. But I, you know, the opening, just when you see the little Clone Wars and the little communicator, I always called it the crunchy cereal opening because even though that's supposed to be the marching feet, I guess, over a comlink or something, it sounds like the same noise in my head whenever I'm crunching cereal. I cannot listen to the show without thinking of crunchy cereal. Is that just me? Is anybody else getting that? You just hear the...
No, but now I will.
The Raisin Bran commercial.
That's exact. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm afraid we're going to have to terminate you. You're fired. Yep. The crunchy cereal anthem is what I've named it.
What I like was that it sounds like, you know, it's the communications or whatever it is. And I remember wondering if they were going to do anything with that whenever we finally saw the new series premiere with the movie in theaters. And if you remember, with the fortune cookie and such, or I guess it wasn't a fortune cookie. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head, but it was the fade in real quick before it did the pull out of the Clone Wars logo. And you hear all of the troopers attacking, like, they're coming at us, blah, 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 you know, that kind of thing. Really harken back to this for me. I saw that and thought, you know, they really are kind of carrying on the tradition because, yeah, we didn't see the little, you know, staticky logo and such, but it kind of was reminiscent of that to me. I think you could take this sound and overlay it with that other sound and you'd have a perfect sort of battlefield montage going on to give us a sense of both of these series.
All right. I want to thank everybody for joining me to discuss our introduction into the Clone Wars micro series, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in to hear us talk about it and invite everyone to come back next week where we will discuss the next three episodes in the series, and we're going to go by the DVD order since that's kind of what everybody has now. Only certain people who are really fixated on the past, Nathan, really remember what the airing order was, but we'll be going through chapter 2, 3, and 4, our introduction to the ARC troopers and the attack on Mon Calamari.
While you're waiting, folks, be sure to check out that commentary for this one over at solosound.net under Cantina Commentaries. It's classic, it's old, but I think it's some of my best Clone Wars humor because I just sort of pressed play on the DVD and let it fly. Beware of swear words, however, because when I let it fly, I really let it fly, as they say.
All right, well, thanks, Dan. Looking forward to it next time.
Thanks. See you next time.
Good to be here, Rockstar. I can't wait for the next one.
Catch you later.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
Yeah, no, oh man, I was rolling the ground. I mean, I had to mute it. I was giggling so hard when you're telling the story. That was like one of my favorite stories.
You're giggling. So if you're giggling, is the way you want to phrase that?
I was
giggling. Laughing like a schoolgirl. He was all giggling.
I was giggling.
I'm still reeling from your little Jerry, because that sounds like the least enthusiastic Springer audience ever.
Yeah.
Jerry.
You know. All right.
All right, kiddies, let's kick this off.
Let's do it.
I still have no intros or anything, so this may never come out, but...
Hey, we'll just put it up there with the book club podcast.
I was going to say, it's Star Wars Action News Book Club 2 Electric Boogaloo. I'm going to have to ask you later what exactly disease smells like, Gary, because I'm curious.
Charlie Sheen.
That was just first thing I thought
about. Charlie Sheen. I thought that was what winning smelled like. Come on.
Precisely. Man. Precisely. When you're a rock star from Mars, you can have whatever funk you want.
I just feel weird. What's that?
Hijacker.
Hijacker.
I love the singing, man. It's like Will Ferrell, where they're not real singers, but they still can hold a tune. It's great. I love your singing, Nate.
You know what I figured out the other day?
What are you trying to say?
Saying I suck. No, I figured out the other day why it was that years ago I thought I could sing. Because I mimic. Just like I do voices and impressions when I'm in class, I mimic singers. I don't sing. I mimic. Which means that if it's not something that previously exists, I suck. And even if it is something that previously exists, I mostly suck.
It's funny, though. It's funny.
Or Ginger Prince or whoever it was.
You know what I discovered that made me think I could sing? Rum.
That's why it's all gone, right?
That is it. All right.
I only sing a little bit during the school year, though. I walk down the hallways, and I kid you not, I sing, "It's beginning to look a lot like failures," at the very end of the semester, as my way of getting people to get off their asses.
Yes. Positive reinforcement. It works every time.
Exactly.
Positive reinforcement. I'm positive you are a screw-up.
I'm positive you're bombing stuff, you little. Okay, anyway. Sorry for hijacking your show there, Dan, but I figured if you're going to, you know, take a pot shot at me, I can make a little plug here and get it back.
Our show? Our show.
Uh-huh.
It's everyone's show except Jerry's now. I'm sorry.
He gave it up.
Wow.
Nathan, you hijack so much, you ought to come with a ski mask and an AK-47. I'm just saying.
Speaking of, like, your commentary as you watch it, these would be perfect for us to do that at. Just, like, watch them together for, you know, 9 minutes and then just, like, what was that? You know?
Yeah.
Our recording time will be shorter.
We're going to MST 3000.
Although we would still talk after the fact, but, you know.
Yeah.
Nathan couldn't get his opening thoughts out in the amount of time it took to watch.
Oh, God. Oh. Wow, we just went right there. Woo!